The views expressed on this Turnbuckle Tabloid live stream or Turnbuckle Tabloid podcast episode do not reflect the views, thoughts, or opinions of the RageWorks brand, including the RageWorks podcast network, RageWorks content partners, advertisers, and affiliates. Viewer and listener discretion is advised.
All right. What's going on, everybody? This is JV Lewis in St. Louis. You know, y'all can check me out on YouTube at JV Lewis. Y'all can check me out on Twitter and Instagram. You know, the Stardust app at JV Lewis 77. You know, I do wrestling, video games, reaction videos, all that type of stuff. So y'all want to check me out, y'all can go ahead and do so.
Turnbuckle Tabloid.
3, 2, 1.
Guess who's back to make its appearance here at Turnbuckle Tabloid? It's your favorite shady bitch, Cougay Monster, here to give you some risque, unadulterated backstories and gossip at Turnbuckle Tabloid. Shade button, please. Yo, girl, Cougay Monster is here to spill all the tea about all the ratchetness that's going on in wrestling. Behind the scenes, underneath the covers, between the sheets, or in between the legs. Shade button, please! News has it that there's a certain couple in the wrestling world who just announced their birth of a child. Seems as though that one of these individuals is not quite happy because they wanted the opposite sex. Hope the baby comes out like Cougay Monster. Fabulous and ready to tangle and wear that a ring that is out there to be performed in. Shade button, please! Rumor has it, after a certain episode which was aired this past week or so, there's a certain individual who's not happy with how their name was smeared across the social media outlets. So much with the idea that the dark side would be not coming out of this person. Let's just say this person has already made contact with certain legal aspects to ensure that his name or her name is not drug into the mud. So, hey guys who ran a said episode of said show, be on the lookout of said individual to bring out a lawsuit against you. Shade button, please! And finally, your girl, Cougay Monster, brings the hottest of the hot, steamiest of steamy, and the most controversial of all rumors. Seems as though there's a pairing at a certain new promotion in which is lighting it up in the bedsheets and behind the curtain. Said ambiguous individual has been, in a bit of a pickle. Because their said significant other had caught some raunchy, steamy, and let's just say hot text messages from another wrestler from the locker room. This ambiguous wrestler is one to say to have had a bit of a rendezvous a few times in a hotel room with another veteran in the game. Let's just say that a lot of ass play is involved, and it might be some bright days for those with a nice firepower. Alrighty, my listeners, Cookie Monster has to go. Still have to rendezvous with two of my lovers from the East and the West Coast. I've entertained you too much. And I have to go now as I sip my Chardonnay and give a adieu to you. Goodbye from Cougay Monster, Shane Martin, please. This segment was brought to you by
Turnbuckle Tabloid.
Yeah, what's going on? It's your boy Mike Harvey, and we're listening to Turnbuckle Tabloid.
Turnbuckle Tabloid, cutting a promo.
Ah, yes, ladies and gentlemen, on a Thursday night, here to share my thoughts, my insight, my feelings of what went down at AEW Grand Slam. Guys, we were in the building, and I gotta tell you, it was a spectacle nonetheless. Not gonna give you the whole full rundown of the card. I want to save that for when I do Around the Square Circle with you guys. But I want you guys to get my views of my feelings, my thoughts about what happened on said night. The feelings, the ambiance, you know the spiel, you know what it is. Phone lines are open for us here. 315-371-4367. That's 315-371-4367. If you guys were in the building, please let us know. We want to hear your thoughts. We want to hear what it was that you guys, how y'all felt, what was happening, much, much more. So, man, I'm still sharing here. I'm going to do, I can multitask. Believe me, I'm good. I'm smart. I know how to juggle things. Let me continue to share, get it going on here. So, just to kick it off with, as the, I play what's going on in the background. I want to make sure I can hear this as well. Make sure I hear this. We good here? Oh, okay. All right, we good. All right, so, first thing I want to discuss is, we're back in New York, ladies and gentlemen. I know that the past couple of weeks, we've seen WWE come through here. AEW has passed through its ways. They went to Newark. We've had Madison Square Garden. And we know that upcoming stuff is going to happen. We're going to have the Barclays. We're going to have the new building being christened by Belmont. But for some reason on this night, it felt different for us. It was our first time back at a live event. And we felt it. We felt the energy. We felt the environment. We felt the fan base coming together. It was as soon as we jumped out of the ride, like we saw the walkway just filled with the t-shirts, the signs, the emotion, hearing the crowd walking into the building, excited to hear what matches they're ready to see, what they're expecting. Individuals who have probably been in that arena before, but not sure of what it is, how it's going to be like with wrestling in there. Because in case you guys don't know, AEW's Grand Slam was done basically in a tennis arena. This is where Arthur Ashe Stadium has the U.S. Open, where the big matches occur. You get the Serena Williams, you get the from the historical matches with Federer and Nadal. You get all those. Big marquee names that went through humongous Grand Slam tennis matches in that building. And now we're seeing a wrestling event. People were like, can this work? Would this really play off properly? Remember, this is New York, baby. We can make shit happen. And sure enough did. And we turned out in droves. It was great to see that a lot of individuals that we would see in the group pages, individuals we see in other people's group pages and such, other podcasters, all in that building for this night. New York represented big time, big time. And you got the haters who's going to be sitting there talking about, well, you know, they talked about it was sold out, but it really wasn't sold out. Granted, it wasn't. I gotta tell you, it was fucking pretty damn close. And For those who left the seat open, it had to be because of whatever reasons and such. But for those who didn't, who weren't in attendance and were to be, shout out to our boy Rondo, man. Big love to him. He was unable to participate in said event, but he put up his tickets. He didn't go out there. He didn't sit there and try to, you know, sell them or do the scalper hustle. You know, he showed love to the family here at Turnbuckle Tabloid. He put up a post, made it a contest, and paid it forward, man. And I gotta give love to Rondo. It was awesome. Gotta say thank you for him and doing such things, because he's family and he's also a great participant in the love of Turnbuckle Tabloid and of wrestling. So we had the sense of going into this building, right? We were as soon as we get to the building, there everyone's lining up at that said entrance, right? Of course, you had to be make sure the vax cards were shown and such, and it was crazy. It was to get back into that feeling, to be around a crowd, not because of the fear of what's going on with the pandemic and not sure of what's it's around you, who's around you and such. It was just crazy to know that we're back somewhat in that sense again. Yeah, Dre, honestly, watching it on TV, sold out or not, you can feel how pumped the crowd was. I'll get to that, but you had to even feel how pumped the crowd was going into that building, how pumped it was. People excited to be at this event, not only because, like I said, we're seeing wrestling again, but it's because we're excited for the fact that this was a new arena, a new venture with a new promotion. When I last left AEW, we went to Philly for it, and we were supposed to line up to see Newark, and this is when everything just basically started shutting down. We weren't able to get that effect of seeing this new promotion get its love. I have to say that now that we're back somewhat trying to open this up again and trying to get back to some kind of normality and regularity, it was great to see people basically feel that excitement again. It was an array of fandom that I hadn't felt in a long time. I usually would feel this way when it'd be an indie show. I love going to indie shows because it's a small crowd who appreciates said promotion or said wrestlers who aren't on the big platforms, who aren't out there with mega network, mega promotion contracts. They're there for the love of the fan base, to get the beer and shake a hand of a fan, and during intermission, get the appreciation and love of the people there. Shout out to our boy wrestling fan Frankie, man. He pulled up last minute, got him there. Dude was stoked out of the gills, man. If you know wrestling fan Frankie, basically, it's really hard to see him excited. And Frankie, not to put you on blast, but you are probably the most deadpan individual I know, but you're funny as fuck. And when you're excited, you can't tell, but you can tell that you're excited. It's a weird thing. And like I said, phone lines are open, guys. 315-371-4367. That's 315-371-4367. If you guys want to call in and give your experience, if you were there, if you're watching it live, whatever, we'll chat it up. So, but shout out to him. He came and he said he hadn't been in an event since 2009. And for us to share that with him, to be a part of him being a loyal listener to the show and helping support the show, whatever, it was our pleasure to give that environment to him. So going into the building, of course, we had to show our vax cards, ID. Didn't see anyone giving so much heat about that. Nothing. Everybody was prepared. Everybody had their shit together. It was all good. Got into this building. Never been in this building before. I've lived in New York all my life. Been to Flushing Meadow. Been to City Field. been in that arena for area for many, many years, many, many times, but never have I ever stepped foot at Arthur Ashe Stadium. So I was kind of unsure of how this would work for wrestling. We got there, you know, the security was good. They were legit. It's funny. I wanted to make the joke about how they weren't really searching white people. There was a lot of let's just say potpourri smells in the air and vapes, steam or smoke around. But I wanted to make that assumption that I bet really the non-whites were going to be the ones searched thoroughly. But no, I have to say that security was on point, and they did what they did. They did what they had to do. And everybody was showing love, man. It was cool. It was so fucking it was so relaxing to be back in that arena again. Fuck, this fucking beer is difficult. Oh, there we go. All right. Cheers, everyone. So we all meet up. Shout out to all the guys that pulled up. Of course, they had Whole Milk Mike. What up? What up, fam? Make sure you check Whole Milk coming up soon. We're gonna have another Nitro episode to watch. We're gonna be pulling up on that soon. Of course, Good Dad Angel, my chulo, pulled up that day. We have, of course, Oski was there. He was able to sneak away from his jury duty and was pulled up that day. Brother AJ pulled up as well. And, of course, Little Bit and Brother Chris pulled up as well. Big, 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 big sightings that day. I kind of do. So, We get up in the arena, and first thing I noticed, it's a fucking beautiful venue for wrestling. Like, honestly, for wrestling, it's a great venue. When you see where they put the ring, how the stage was set up, it wasn't so. And I give it to AEW because it's not like how WWE goes huge with the large fucking Titantron. The stage and all such, it's really, like Sully and I love to say, it's very obnoxious. It's very, gregarious to do something of that magnitude. But I get it, because that's WWE. That's the way that they roll. Thank you, Dre. I can get that. I am the, I could be the Fat Joe on how he's covered the verses with Lox and Dipset. I'll take that. By the way, I've been doing this shit for years. It's not like I'm copying his style, but thank you. I just want to make sure to make that clear. It's funny you said that. I've never heard that one before. That's actually a new one. I've gotten Steve Wilkos from the Steve Wilkos, Jerry Springer and shit. I've never got Fat Joe doing this. That's actually pretty funny. So, it was set perfectly. Even the seats that we had, and it looks like everybody that was with, that we know from the podcasting world and from our wrestling cohorts, we all were in that upper tier. But even in that upper tier, you still had a great view of wrestling. It wasn't as though like you had to pull out the fucking binoculars or use your phone to zoom into shit. It was as though that you're able to capture everything at one set. It was great. Plus, the screens were for the most part, which, by the way, Ringside News, I don't know what's with these fucking this fucking website. They look to bring heat to themselves. They put up a post in which they were saying that the lighting was blinding the fans. And none of us sitting there had that sense. We never had the feeling that the lights were too bright. The screens were too much. No, I've not heard not one individual make a peep about that. None. Don't get it. Don't understand it. People just want to spur shit just to spur shit. And especially a website like that is just, what was this? JD, he pulls up. I want to say the best part of the show from the TV end was falling off. Oh God. That part I have to say, I'll save for the around the square circle part. But yes, Arn, it's fucking hilarious. So, as for the aesthetic of the arena, everything for us, the fans, the feelings that was going on, you felt the energy, you felt the the swell of love of being there was cool. Like, we were all like fucking we're hyped for this shit to pop off. Then you get to the facility itself. Yeah. Okay. So let's get, first of all, getting merch was damn near impossible. If I saw anybody carrying a bag with merch in it, I would have sworn that they either went through the line with a sword or a machete, because there was, I mean, the lines were ridiculously long for merchandise. And I know everybody wanted to get something a part of being at that event, but I don't know whether or not this is a AEW thing, or I don't know if it was the arena's doing or whatever. But when you go to an event like WrestleMania or NXT, or hell, I have to even say that even if I've gone to an indie show, their fucking merch tables are more accessible than what was going on this night. It was, I couldn't even attempt to try to do that. It was impossible. That being said, getting food was just, if not even worse. Lines were going from one vendor to the next vendor. That's how long it was. Now, I've heard individuals talk about that, well, you know, this occurs because, lack of staff, and this is what happens, you know, not expecting the numbers that they had, or they assumed that it would be and such. And I'm going, yeah, that's all fine and dandy, but how is that my problem? You know, I am, you know, of course you're going to get wait times. You're going to get, you know, certain indiscrepancies where food might not be prepared or might not be ready at time, or whatever the case may be, but at least have it flowing, have the lines going. And wow, it was the last time I had to deal with a long line like that was at WrestleMania 29. And even that, I was done in a rapid session. It was quick, because the only match that I think I missed, I think it was like the Jericho Fandango pre-show match, and that was it. Anytime I went for a beer, anytime I went to use the bathroom, anything, it was quick, in and out. Everybody was on. This is probably the worst where it came to fan service I've ever been to. I've gone to indie shows where it would be 2,000 in a venue, and I still was able to get a beer as fast as I can, you know, less than 5 minutes, or get chips or a hot dog in less than 10 with a smaller staff. It was just, it was terrible. I have to say, it was bad. It was also a thing as well that the arena itself has the availability to open up and close. So during that, I guess they have to be told ahead of time, you know, what the weather is going to be like, so they could leave the roof open or not. They were expecting rain. They probably thought it was going to happen. So they left the arena, the roof closed. My God, when I tell you the stench that was in that place, I was speaking to our boy Isaac earlier, and I said it smelled like BO, hot dogs, and virginity. It was it was bad. It was, everybody's worrying about COVID. I just thought I was gonna walk out with the smell of just stench. I mean, sure, like you had to do those checks, like you had to make, is this me? Am I smelling like this? Like, what the fuck? And that's exactly what it smelled like. It smelled like what the fuck in that building. I have to say, I couldn't for the life of me understand why they didn't open up this roof. Give us something. Since we can't get food, we can't get merch. I bought a beer and it was warm as fucking as moose piss. What else can you give me? Oh, now I got to deal with the possibility of contracting COVID and walking out with 37 smells of BO all over me. I was like, fuck. I'm hoping that We walked out, and I remember distinctly somebody says, yeah, I'm going to make sure that I take a COVID test like tomorrow, because it was just, the sense of it was like, what the fuck? So back to let's swing it back to, let's say, the good parts of this, right? Let's go to the good. Once again, the stage, the way that the presentation does was amazing. Was awesome. I have to say, kudos to AEW. This is my second AEW show, and both times I have to say that out of the two, because we went to the one in Philly a couple of years later, the presentation is much better. I preferred the Philly venue better because there was a little bit more spacing and a little bit more accessibility to things. But as per how the presentation was, this time they stepped up their game immensely. Immensely. Chris is like, because the COVID could escape. You know, you're right. You know what? Let's keep the COVID in the building, ladies and gentlemen. You're right. Spot on, sir. Let's make sure we all go and get tested just to make sure to keep the numbers up going. That shit didn't make any sense. So, of course, everybody's on their phone. They want to see what they think is going to be the kickoff match for Dynamite. We get a couple of dark matches. My thing was, the show says start time is at 7. We didn't get, if I'm not mistaken, we started getting dark matches maybe around 7:20, 7:25, around that time. I give credit to them because whatever matches they had, they went into the next match right behind it. There was very little pause breaks for any of that before Dynamite happened. Shout out to them for that. But I was thinking, I said, shit, we are really going to be here for fucking 4 hours. Because you get Dynamite and then we're going to get the Rampage. I would have thought that they would have at least try to cram as much in with, you know, between 7 and 8, you know, get a couple of matches in there. And then maybe if we have to finish off Rampage after, we'll do it from like 10 to 11. Why the fuck are we doing dark? You guys have your own facility in Orlando. Why are we doing dark? Just because you want a little taste of Grand Slam? Fuck that. Nobody gave a fuck. We didn't care. I swear to you, by the time Dynamite happened and it was done, we saw people like starting to leave. It's like, I'm not going to stay here. We already know it's going to be a problem to get out of here. We get the presentation of Dynamite kicking off. I've never seen Tony Khan come out before an event. I've heard news, heard stories about it, and to see it live, it's two things I have to address. Number one, the AEW fan base. I'm talking about the hardcore, and there's a lot of you motherfuckers out there. The hardcore fan base of AEW. God, you guys, I've been saying it for the longest. You are just as fucking bad as fucking Trump supporters. Or just fucking icon. Like, you guys pray to these idols. Like they're the second coming of Jesus. I saw, and it wasn't even on the level of like jokes or being like ironic or stuff. You guys are really kissing the fucking throne of this guy. Yes, yo, Dre. So honestly, they are really the my least favorite thing about it. They are. I could deal with I cannot deal with the hardcore AEW fans. I don't even know. I've never even known any hardcore WWE fans that would have gone this far. It's by far embarrassing. And you guys also share it on social media. I've seen individuals like post pictures of Tony Khan like he's the Messiah. And I really want to say that it's ironic or it's just done in jest, but oh my God, it's fucking embarrassing. I get douche chills watching you guys. And to see it live was even worse. Oh my God. I mean, I saw sections stand up and bow to Tony Khan. I was like, are you fucking serious? Wondering how many of you motherfuckers would give him head. Shit. I was like, what the fuck? Then on the flip side, on the next side of that is for the first time seeing Tony Khan, and I was like, all right, it's cool that he comes out, addresses the crowd. You know, that's nice. But, you know, in all honesty, it's not really necessary, but it's nice. It's cool to do that. He's a fucking awkward dude. He's weird. I'm sorry to tell you. Like, he just seems awkward. Like, I'm not sure whether or not if it's, if he has like an ADHD or if it's like he's trying too hard. It was just weird. It was a weird kind of banter that he was trying to have with the crowd. It was very fanboy / erratic. It was all over the place. But still, I have to say that it was still cool to see that, you know, the owner and such was very involved with the fan base. You ever see a kid when he gets a new toy at Christmas, but he's outside happy as shit and wants everybody to see it? Yeah, that's him. Look at my new toy. Yeah, JD. Yeah, I could get that. I could see that as well. But it's like your new toy is basically about to be 3 years old, and I get it. You're fucking, you're awkward. You're weird. You're weird, dude. So, we get the first match, and now, like I said, I'm not gonna go through the whole match by match, play by play. I'm saving that for Around the Square Circle, but I'll go to how the card was set up and basically the fans. God, the last time I was in an arena like that where the fans were so hyped up was the Raw after WrestleMania 29 when Dolph cashed in on Alberto Del Rio. That was the last time I felt that kind of energy from a promotion like that and that base. It was electric. That the everybody around you was so connected with, especially the opening match, the fucking curtain jerk. Or to get that, it was almost you felt the air kind of leave the arena for a second. And thank goodness, because the smell of BO just left for that moment. But then it came back in a large weight, as if 20 tons of elephant was falling on your chest once it started. Because woof. The fans were so in it, and it's really hard to like convey how the energy and the sound that's going on when you're watching it on TV, but live, it's so different. But you still get that sense of, yes, we're watching something. We're here. We're part of this. I'll go through basically how the rest of the night went through. Fans were still in it. It was always great when you get the participation, especially when Punk comes out. I love the AEW fans for this. For this, I love them. They know where the tide goes when it comes to who needs to be recognized as a heel, who needs to be recognized as a face. The only one that we're still working ourselves through with is basically Britt Baker. But that's fine because, you know, that's just what Britt Baker is. But even so, she was still getting over. Ruby was getting over. You still had that banter back and forth. I'm not going to give you guys any spoilers. I know there's already spoilers going out on the masses about what happened on Rampage. But like I said, there were people who left after Dynamite. But there was still a large capacity in that building. And the energy was still there even for Rampage. You guys, make sure you check it out. Other than that, as for me to close this out, I still say you fucking AEW fans are sheep. You guys are sheep, and you fucking are still kneeling at the fucking golden calf. And the only thing that's different now that makes it worse is that now, after the year and a half, almost 2 years that I was at the first AEW shows, that you guys have gotten worse because of the signings and such. You guys don't see any wrong, and you know what? More power to you. But it's just embarrassing on how you fucking guys act. It's just as though, like, okay, we get it. You love the product. Would you please get off your knees and wipe your face? We already know what it is. But through it all, I had a great time. I was with the peoples. I was with the fam. JD, next time we got to find a way to get you at these shows. We got to come down. We got to partake in this. You have to be part of the festivities. But other than that, my pros and cons, the card was stacked. Beautiful thing. I wish that we would have had something that gave us a pop during Dynamite. Gave us a pop later on Rampage. You'll see later. But I wish we would have had that CM Punk kind of thing. Or wish we would have probably had a Daniel Bryan one. But we did get the match that we get with those two. Like I said, the setting, the environment was dope. The way that the set and the lighting and all that was fine. It was real cool. The cons was, once again, just the arena and the way that the food vending and the fucking merch, you know, terrible, terrible. If they're going to go back there again, they better fucking be sure to get their shit together, because that was dreadful. Even people who were trying to leave to go home was worse. Listen, at WrestleMania 29, it was 35, it was bad. It was bad at 35. I don't know how this was almost worse. People were saying it was probably worse to leave. But other than that, guys, I have to say I enjoyed myself, and I was happy that I was with a group of people who they themselves enjoyed the festivities as well. And I'm going to say that I would go again. I know a lot of my people are sitting there wondering if I was going to sit and sing Judas. And I did. I did sing Judas. I did. Because they know how bitter I can be. I can be an asshole. But I did. I did partake. And and it's, once again, it's an event. It's a promotion that I will not hesitate to go and see again. But that's going to wrap up Cutting a Promo. Much more to go down this week on this Turnbuckle Tabloid episode. Going to be story time with Jay Santee. Make sure you download, stream, and subscribe to this episode. And more coming down the way. You guys want to hear the reviews and such of what's going down in this week's wrestling, as much more of wrestling rundown in next episode. But yes, guys, thank you for sharing, subscribing, and enjoying what's going down here at Turnbuckle Tabloid. I'm out of here. To hear story time, make sure you download and subscribe to Turnbuckle Tabloid on your podcasting outlets. Check you guys out later on, and see you guys in a sec on Turnbuckle Tabloid.
Bring the in-ring action home to your tabletop with the number one wrestling card game in the world, Super Show the Game. And live all your wildest wrestling fantasies without ever taking a chair shot. Available on supershowthegame.com. Order today and join a spectacle so grand it can only be called the Super Show.
This is Jimmy Lloyd, and fuck Turnbuckle Tabloid.
That's awesome. Love it. That's even better than I expected. So, story time, ladies and gentlemen. I'm feeling nostalgic since having a return to wrestling live. Yesterday was one of those days that it was a comeback moment for us all in New York City for professional wrestling. It was that feeling of being a part of not only the live environment, seeing the lights, the sounds and such, but it was also that moment of just getting connected with something that we either grew up and loved from childhood, or coming back to something that we watched earlier and probably, you know, fell away or fell out of love with, and found a return to the product with a new atmosphere and a new look, which is something that made me think about how I became a fan of professional wrestling. I've shared a few stories here and there. And sometimes, you know, it gets to reminiscing time, especially when it comes to milestones of the show or, you know, our anniversary and such, or when someone brings it up in conversation. I'll explain my reasoning to being a a fan of wrestling for so many years, but I never really got to sit and talk to you guys in depth on how it became such a part of my household, my livelihood, my connection with others throughout my years, my 45 years on Earth. Wow. When I say it like that, I just see the sands through the hourglass going through its motions and hearing these are the days of our lives. Cause shit, oof, 45 years. And I always tell people I don't feel a day over 25 until I have to go to work or deal with a certain physical altercation, or I have to put something together, or after having a night of heavy drinking, or having to run for the train, having to run for the bus, picking up heavy objects, possibly taking a heavy shit, so forth and so forth. Yeah, but other than that, I feel great. I feel awesome. So when I was thinking about discussing this as a new segment, Story Time with Jay Santee. Story Time with Jay. Okay, so I wanted to go to my roots, my beginnings of becoming a connoisseur, if you say, a fan of wrestling. Growing up, of course, in Brooklyn, growing up in the projects, you know, you depending on where you live, where did you live, the era, the time, there's really only a small window of activities that you can do. It would either be in school or with family members. If you were lucky enough to be able to go outside after during a certain age and such and hang out, or you just came across certain things and other subjects and I guess activities and such. You just happen by happenstance it comes your way. So for me, growing up in the projects in Brooklyn, I was an only child. I was raised pretty much by a single mom and my grandparents. I really didn't go outside much. I didn't have much activities to go to the back of my building, which was a playground. My mother kept me very sheltered that way until a certain age. I guess it was a fear of me growing up not being that kind of rough and tumble kind of kid. I had cousins, but they weren't around much. I would usually just go see them on every other weekends or spend a summer with them. But it was always, there was gaps with that. So the only thing I really knew was school and home. And of course, what was on TV. In school, growing up in public school, we would, of course, you would hear of certain activities or entertainment, like what's been on TV or you'll hear about Knight Rider or fucking A-Team, shit like that. I was lucky enough since my mother was one of those women that she was constantly working. I had liberties where I was able to watch certain shows I would know that other kids weren't allowed to watch, you know, because my grandparents would let me be how I, you know, let me be how I am and who I was. And I wasn't really a problematic kid. So, you know, they'll come in, check in on me, bring me food and, you know, blase, blase, see if everything's all right. But usually I just stood in the room, did my work and watched TV and played with my toys and shit, whatever. In my household was also my uncle. Now, my Uncle Freddie, I've mentioned him numerous times on the show, where although we've had a troubled history for many, many years, I have to say that in my upbringing, he was a quintessential part of my upbringing because of that male figure in the household. My grandfather was another male figure in my household who showed love and caring, but he was older and he didn't really interact as much as, let's say, a father would. You know, go outside, play ball, you know, and all that shit. And my uncle did that. My uncle, he had his own child. He had his own son. And he too had those situations to where his relationship with his kid was every other weekend. He got him in certain instances and, you know, that kind of spiel. You know what it was. Part-time dad bullshit. And it's crazy because his kid literally lived like two blocks away. But it's always something. But I was the stay-at-home boy. I was at home. I was in the house. So everything that went through, I guess you would figure what he should be doing with his son was happening with me. I would get the bike. I would learn about sports. I would get the video games. I would get, you know, whatever snacks or treats that he would get at the store. I reap the benefits from it. And now that I think about it, as I have this conversation, it makes me think that maybe this is why I don't have a relationship with my cousin, his son, that I have with my other cousins, because maybe there's some hidden resentment because of that. Maybe he does have this anger towards me that I replaced him, maybe in his mindset. But, you know, not to be Freud or any other psychology doctors out there. I just I think about it and it just made me think. I said, shit, no wonder the fucker hasn't spoken to me in years. To be honest, I really don't give a fuck. But still, it's just like, I now that I'm saying this, I'm piecing it together. Any case, leads us back to what pro wrestling is. So it's also happens that my uncle was a indie wrestler. He would wrestle in the neighborhood a couple of years before I was born. And during my early years of childhood, he wrestled under a mask. He was known as the King Cobra. He had the lucha mask, and he had a few of them. And he had pictures. I had the 8x10s with him autographing them and shit like that. And it so happened that it wasn't as though like he presented it to me. Like, look at what I used to do. I found them and I asked, you know, what is this? I didn't know what lucha was. I knew of wrestling because you've heard during that time of like the Hulk Hogan's and the Iron Sheik's and shit like that. Classy Flair, Freddie Blassie and all that. But I didn't know what lucha was. I didn't know what like the mask really was, because by that time, I think Mil Máscaras was already gone. He was like really the premier mask wrestler. And anytime that they would show a wrestler in a mask in that era, it was it wasn't in our territory. It wasn't in the Northeast. It was usually like in Mid-South and stuff like that. That's where Mr. Wrestling 2 and all those guys would come up. So when I approached him with these 8x10s, these black and whites, and he explained to me, he said, yeah, that's me. And he pulled out, he had a suitcase that had his gear. It had his wrestling boots, it has his lucha masks, it had his trunks, his tights and shit. And I was interested at about, wow, I didn't know I had, you know, a wrestler in my family. On a peripheral, I knew of wrestling, but I was never really into it fully yet. I didn't really get into it yet. It wasn't until he saw that I was showing interest where that's when he pulled out, you know, his magazines, where he showed me the early days in the late 70s, mid 70s, the Bockwinkels, the Zabiscos, the Morales is, the Von Erichs when they were on the come up early on, when you had Lawler, it was crazy that there was all these wrestlers that I didn't know of because they didn't really hit that scene. The only one I really knew of who he was a big fan of, who he constantly spoke of, was Bruno Sammartino. So I would go through these magazines. I would read them. I would see their wrestling history, how storylines progressed when Zbyszko and Bruno had their falling out, and Zbyszko did his dastardly deed, you know. And I was intrigued. They became like my new comic books. And every time he was working, at the time he would work as a messenger, I would ask him if he could leave a magazine out for me so I could read it when I come home from school. And when I would come home, there would be one around, maybe on the bed or on the kitchen table and stuff. So it was all the dining room table. And I would, after I do my homework, I would go through it, and I would see all, you know, I would learn about the Mil Máscaras, and, you know, how he was going from a territory to territory. You would hear of the Guerreros, Hector and Gory. And it made me intrigued to learn that it wasn't just the WWF that the kids that I knew in school were who they were. That's what they knew of. But it made me intrigued to know that there was like this whole big bastion of wrestling that was out there that was hitting, you know, across the country. And you see the covers of the magazines. You see like Ric Flair all bloodied up, or you see Dusty with blood, or you get the Harley Race and that kind of shit. I started to take that and bring it to school. I brought that kind of education to school. And when guys would sit there and talk about what Nikolai Volkov did, and who George the Animal Steel was, and I would, you know, bring up these other wrestlers, and did you know about the Freebirds? You never heard of the Freebird Rule, or what's going down with the Junkyard Dog, even before Junkyard Dog was in WWF? And, you know, kids looked at me like if I had a fucking a tumor hanging off the side of my cheek, and like, no, I'm sitting. And finally, one day I took one of his magazines, because usually what I would do is I would take the magazine, I look through it, read it, you know, while I'm taking a shit or after, you know, watching G.I. Joe or whatever, and I go through it. And I took one of his magazines with me to school. And I got kind of scared, because although my uncle wasn't an abusive kind of individual, actually, if anything, he was more loving and caring for me. He was, I don't know, he was just loud, and I didn't want to hear him be mad, because he was just loud. He was just one of those fucking, I guess, Spanish men just being loud. So I would think that he was mad. And then, you know, one day I took it to school, and I was during lunch, I was showing the kids about fucking what's in these magazines. And I brought it home, and it was like as though like it was a little crumpled up. It was a little messed up, because I was just showing everybody. Everybody was passing it around. And when I went to give it back to him, he looked at it and he was like, "What happened to my magazine?" And I told him, I was like, "Well, it kind of got messed up. I wanted to read it in school." So I thought he was upset about it, but he actually got elated, because he felt that, wow, he shared something with me that I want to share with people in school. And that even grew a larger connection with he and myself for that time period. He began to go and buy new magazines. He would buy the Pro Wrestling Illustrateds and the other wrestling mags that were at the candy store that was up the block from us. I was elated, because now I'm not only am I seeing you know, the stories of what's going on with the AWA, this new wrestler coming up, Kurt Hennig, or the moving forward with the possibility of AWA and the NWA and WCW doing this ultimate mega show and such like that. You hear these stories and these rumors, and you get to hear of who might go to another promotion and stuff. And I was all in the inside, and I was so excited because now no other kids were really doing that. And I was even so selfish with it because I didn't even bring those magazines, the new magazines. I would just go to the school and I would just act like I knew everything. I'm like, oh, you know who's coming to WWF? I hear that there's a guy named Hacksaw Jim Duggan. He's actually Jim Duggan at the time. Hacksaw was Butch Reed at the time. He was called Hacksaw Butch Reed. I'll show you. Yeah, that Hacksaw, you know, that Jim Duggan is gonna come. And he's bad. He's real bad. Oh, you know who you don't want to see in WWF? Oh, Bruiser Brody. That's a guy you really don't want to see. It became my own thing when I started to connect more with wrestling, because it became a thing to where it wasn't just the it wasn't just WWF. It was more. I've often talked about me finding and coming across a channel on the UHF stations. If you guys don't know what UHF is, it's basically, VHF and UHF. VHF was where you had channel 2, channel 4, channel 5, channel 7, channel 9, channel 11, channel 13, the basic channels. UHF had a little bit more. If you had a better stream, you had channel 21, 25, 31, 41, 47, you know, 55. So you got those extra channels. And it so happened that, you know, me toying around with the TV being bored or whatever, I found a station, which was U68. U68 was a station that basically did public access, people who would pay to be on TV. They were, you know, people would pay to have their own talk shows, and every borough had their separate ones. They had, like, Brooklyn had their own, Manhattan had their own such. And U68 would either have those kind of shows, or they would run sometimes music videos. When MTV became like the big thing, UHF stations wanted to have their own kind of MTV kind of show. And I got to a time where it was one day I was watching, I believe they were playing music videos, and it hit about 7 o'clock. Mind you, I had moved from my grandparents' apartment, and we had moved downstairs to the next floor of the projects. We were only a floor down, and my mother and I had our own place. And one day I was just sitting there waiting to see what's going to be the next music video show to come on, and NWA came on. And it wasn't the NWA as in the fucking Eazy-E and Dr. Dre fucking group. No, it was the wrestling NWA. And I finally began to see the wrestlers that I was reading about in magazines for quite some time. And now I got to see the Von Erichs. I got to see the Bruiser Brodies wrestle. I was able to see big matches with Dusty Rhodes and the Horsemen and such. For me at that age, I maybe was, I have to say about shit, about 11, 12 years old. It was eye opening because all I knew was Hulkamania, seeing that on TV. And even that was difficult at the time, because there was a lot of aspects of that where you only got the Saturday shows or the Sunday shows, and you wanted to see what other people were seeing on cable, because we didn't have cable in the P's. Nah, that shit didn't come until later. We didn't get like those MSG cards and shit. It wasn't until later where I got to see the ESPN shows with the Showboat, where Vern Gagne was running AWA in there and shit like that, where I got to see the first time, like Kurt Hennig and, Undertaker before he became Undertaker, when he was Mark Galloway and the skyscrapers and shit like that. I didn't see that until later on. I was almost deeper in my teens when we got cable. So when I was able to see on U68 guys like that, I finally saw the wrestling I was reading about for a long time. It was a big moment for me, and those guys at my age, it was men. And it's funny because now that I look at it, the men weren't even really men. Like when I saw Magnum TA, he looked like he was fucking a grown 40-year-old man. And when he was wrestling, he was only like 24, 25 years old. When I saw him do battle with Nikita Koloff and such, they were only fucking in their early 20s. They looked like grown men wrestling. So it was when you look at it in retrospect, it's a shock to the system to realize, wow, this is what guys would look like. And you know, it was a larger than life look for wrestling. That's what my mentality is for it now, to as opposed to then. Like sometimes I'll look at certain wrestlers and it's almost like you want to look at them like superheroes, because when I was a kid, that's what I saw them as. They were doing phenomenal feats, you know, pressing guys over their heads, throwing them out of a ring, leaping from the top of turnbuckles and you know, putting them in certain maneuvers that would basically become a part of everyone's household, because we were all either grabbing our little brothers or sisters or cousins and putting them in these positions. So yeah, we emulated that, and we wanted to emulate it or try to. It was me who ended up putting the rest of my my cousins and family members to be in a certain way entertained or interested in wrestling. My mom, when she wasn't working, we would watch the Saturday night main events together. My aunt, who I call my sister aunt because she's basically my aunt, but it was like her and I are like siblings. She would sit there and always tell me, well, you know, it's fake, right? No, it's fake. And I knew what it was, but didn't care. And it wasn't until I grew older and she still would watch it. And we would, I would go to her house and watch pay-per-views at her place when she got her own place and was having us over to chill and shit. And you know, even to that day, she'll be like, you know, it's fake, right? And it's like, why are you putting this on for us? You know what the fuck it is. But she would still be into it. Thankfully, it's still it transfers over to my child, because they've done it recently as well. It's cliche to say the phrase the glory days, but it really was. It was the glory days. It was the days of when, you know, you watch, and my era was the rock and wrestling, and you got the ice cream bars and the big fucking rubber dolls that, God forbid, if you had a dog, your dog would tear it up and make it into just a wire that's left inside of it. You went and was lucky to find that Korean or Chinese guy that was vending on the strip or had his store who would sell the t-shirts. It's the golden era where you would find the tape traders, where you knew someone else whose father or uncle or grandfather or even grandmothers as well who went and bought the WrestleManias or any WWF classic tapes and such, and you would trade tapes or they'd let you hold them and shit. It was an era to where, with us, after school we would set up matches, or during the day at lunch we would book a card and we would have classroom debates on who should battle who, where we would cut promos on each other, or someone would be someone else's manager, and we design and designate who will be referees. And then all of a sudden you come to find out that other classes were doing it. Then you get your own cross promotion happening where one class is ready to clash with the other class, and you guys are having your own mini pay-per-views in the yard or offset from the school because they didn't want you wrestling on the property. This is the precursor days of when people were doing backyard wrestling. I remember having those arguments in a lunchroom with whose wrestler was the better wrestler. Was Ultimate Warrior legit? Was he going to beat Hulk Hogan? Was the Bulldogs better than the Hart Foundation? Who's Ric Flair? And is he really that good? Remember, I remember having these conversations and debates. It's those days to where I kind of miss that mentality, that mindset to where, as cliche as it become, it's real to me, damn it, is really on the mindset to where, yeah, I wish I could think of it that way anymore. Even when raising my own daughter and she was watching and certain aspects would just jump out, I had to stop myself certain times from saying, no, it's fake. It's all right. It wasn't until she got somewhat older where she started seeing glimpses of stuff here and there, or you know, overhearing me having conversations with people, where she realizes that, because there's a certain mystique that you still want to keep alive with that. It's almost like telling her that there's no Tooth Fairy or there's no Santa Claus, because at the end of the day, they figure it out for themselves. I can't even remember them. I don't even think I've had the conversation where it's like, well, you know, Santa ain't real no more, right? It just became, what are you getting me for Christmas? I don't even want to have that conversation where we discuss, well, how do you take a pile driver without getting hurt? Never even thought about that. It shit just happens. And it kind of sucks when it's gone. I envy those who watch wrestling with those immature eyes, because that's when you really had a good time watching it. Now it's now you're mindful of watching it and critiquing it. As much as I sit there now and watch other fans and call them marks and give them that smirk to say, are you serious? I kind of am half envious, because I remember the days when I was younger when I would look at wrestling and enjoy for what it was, not for what we look at as now as adults, looking at the technique, the pace, the chemistry. We don't have that anymore, where we could look at wrestling as its purest form, when it's just the entertainment, the fun, the what if someone getting busted open, someone possibly being in real convulsing pain from a leg lock, or taking that brain bust and wondering, ooh, are they ever going to walk again? No more can we sit back at that time where we were a kid and feel as though that we can have a connection with the fact that we actually can enjoy a person for being the larger in life individual in that ring. Nowadays, we're so jaded that all we give a fuck about is whether or not if it's a 5-star match, or if it's the fact that they cut a promo enough that it's believable. We never worried about that. And I never really worried about that as a kid. I loved my heels. I loved to see a guy pull out a victory when you didn't think it would happen. I didn't give a fuck about, wow, another small package pulls out a win, another schoolboy win. All we cared about was, wow, our guy won. But now we come to the day and age to where it's like, now it's about, how can I rate the performance? I look back and I say, you know what? I do miss those days. And I do thank my uncle for that. I do thank him for opening that door of professional wrestling and had me walk into it. And as though as many years I've resented him, and I was angry with him for a lot of shit that he did with the family or against the family, I have to say that I can't appreciate the fact that he actually opened up my eyes up to a world that I really probably would have been blasé about, not giving a fuck about. And I wouldn't be doing this silly, jaded podcast every week, twice every week without him, because at the end of the day, as much as I get pissed off about you know, the lunacy of the fandom, the ridiculousness of the product, and the fact that I do miss the imaginary world I used to live in. I do want to thank him for the fact that at least I have that, and I have this as a continuance of what my youth is and was. So as I sit back and sip on my beer, and I recognize that his birthday actually passed a couple of weeks ago, I want to thank my Uncle Freddie for putting me onto wrestling. And as many times as you walk past me in the later years, and we didn't speak much, it was all in passing, he would still ask me, "Still watching wrestling? Yeah. What you like right now?" Yeah, kind of like the New Japan stuff, like the Ring of Honor. WWE's still good. Just trying to follow through with it because of the, you know, it's kind of stupid. Vince McMahon fucked it up. Yeah. But you know what? You know who you should watch. And I would listen for a couple of seconds, still trying to dance around the fact that I should not be listening to him. But at the end of the day, there's still that connection and that bond. And then he'll laugh, and in his last breath, he'll turn to me and say, "You should put me on your podcast. I talk some shit." And I would say, "Yeah, that's not going to happen." But I do say I have to thank you. I have to thank him for that. So as I wrap up story time with Jay for today, I have to say that I do miss the mystique that was wrestling for me. And the only thing that I look forward to is the fact that I can help to convey my still love of this form of sport and education to you guys, and educate you guys to what I can remember, because a lot of shit does get lost. I'm getting older and I drink a lot. But I also want to also share that in the next upcoming story time will be more of a next transition or transgression, or whichever word you want to use, of the teenage years, of what happens there and how it translates to what became the Jay Santy that we know now. So yeah, thank you guys for listening and being a part of Turnbuckle Tabloid. Make sure you check us out on all social media platforms. Check us out on the Like group page on Facebook. Make sure you check us out on Instagram on Turnbuckle Tab, as well as on Twitter at Turnbuckle Tab. And also check us out on YouTube and on TikTok at Turnbuckle Tabloid. Also, make sure you check us out on all the podcasting outlets. Of course, that's on iHeart, Spotify, Google Podcasts, as well as everywhere else. Please don't say you can't find it, because we're everywhere trying to climb the charts, ladies and gentlemen. I want you guys, just for the sake of humanity and the sake of those who are wrestling fans and listeners, please be real with yourself. We are the fucking truth here, and just recognize that we keep it a buck in the sight. And I want to show love to everybody who's been a part of the RageWorks clique and RageWorks family. Make sure you check us out at RageWorksNetwork.com, where you get all the podcasts available to the RageWorks family. It's under that one umbrella. And make sure you always check us out at RageWorks.net for reviews, previews, articles that are connected to the world of pop culture, video games, movies, TV shows, and, of course, comic books. It's all available to you guys at RageWorks.net. All right. I'm out of here. I'm getting my sip on. The voice is getting raspy. That means I got much more work to do. I have been busting it out. And as always, guys, take a bump. I'm out. Laters.
Turnbuckle Tabloid.
3, 2, 1.
Turnbuckle Tabloid.